A65. Number 13B.
All right. So, can you see here we find the reason really for Jesus' demonstrations? Jesus didn't study law, he didn't study economics, he didn't study finances, he didn't study medicine, he didn't study sociology, he didn't study any of these sciences, and yet solved all his problems in the field of these sciences on the basis of his understanding that there is in being only one but an infinite principle. So whenever he had a question in any field of human activity, he would be able to fall back on his understanding of that one infinite principle and would solve from that standpoint the problems that presented themselves to him. What else, therefore, could we deduce from this level that science is depicted through that one principle? Well, that it is one principle, that there is only one principle, the principle of all science, that this principle is infinite. Yeah. Therefore, that it must really show the infinite harmony of being. Because if there is only one principle, that which characterizes and the interpretation and demonstration of that one principle is really showing that we have to do with a being that is within itself absolutely harmonious. Okay. Now, we take the law that rules this level of science. We said always that it is not enough just to pinpoint a point of intersection just with a synonymous term, because we know that in being there are laws ruling, and that we should somehow understand the nature of these laws. Now, how could we define at this point the law of science, of the level of science? How do you feel that we can define it? And in order to define it, say, perhaps you know it by heart because you have learned it in the books, or no, not in the books, it's only in the tapes. You have learned it by heart, but you should know how this law has been established, how it has been formulated. Just see that's the difference between learning a law and knowing a law. We can learn what is the law of gravitation and can learn by heart that formula, and then we know it, we have learned it, but we may not understand it, because we will not be able to say why we need all these elements in that law. We must see how that law was seen and how it was discovered, and what must be the elements of a law. And therefore, also here, in the science of being, this is one of the big questions, that we must know how to formulate a law. Fundamentally, how do we formulate the law? We formulate it through the categories, not through anything else, not by guessing, not just because we feel this is a nice law. We formulate the law by seeing that they must be laws of the three categories. either of the category of the seven or the category of the four or the category of the levels. Therefore, if we know the categories and see what is the main tonality of a category, we can begin to formulate a law. Therefore, if we go to science itself, we would have to ask ourselves what we have done the day before. We would have asked ourselves, what is the tonality of science itself? And we said, for instance, Frank said, it's being, being, being. Or you said that it is being, being aware of itself as being. It is just showing that it is, so to say, that you always have, so to say, three elements. Namely, you have being, and you say something about that being, namely, fundamentally, namely, that being is. That's the second element that is necessary, and that you say is what. That's the third element, and says its own being. So being, being, being. That's one way we could bring it out. So can you see how you formulate a law by just asking very, very clearly, what is the tonality of that category? We said the tonality of that category of science is, figuratively, if I make a gesture, they can't see it on the tape, it is being, being, being. So you can see that there are three elements involved in it. This here, being, and my direction, my showing the direction towards me, being, being what? Me, myself, being, being. Yes. This may have given a funny sound on the tape because I touched my neck mic. So those who know, who listen to the tapes may know what it was. So we can formulate that law through those three elements because they always remain the same, those three elements. Mrs. Eddy uses that law just once, as far as I know, in the textbook, and says it a little bit different, but tonality-wise, the same thing, that she says that God is his own infinite mind. So God, being, is what? Is being what? Being what? His own mind. His own God. God being his own God. Now, we know, and this is now just a rule that we know in Christian Science, at the moment we use the term God, that we can replace it by the synonymous terms. So if God is used in a general way, you can place or can replace it through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Yes? Are you with me? Huh? Yes. Therefore, if we say being, being, with a capital B naturally, we can say mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Then you have the second element, being, well-being. You cannot change that. That's a fixed. But the moment you say being, being, being with a capital B, you again can replace it through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Yes? So that fundamental law, which in your language was being, 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 you can say mind, mind being spirit, mind being soul, mind being life, principle, mind being life, truth and love. You can say spirit being mind, spirit being soul, spirit being principle, and you come to the 7 times 7 elaboration of that fundamental law. So can you see that when I say, for instance, life being its own life, that is not a fundamental law, but an elaboration of a fundamental law. So that a law can always be expanded and expanded if we know how to do it. Yeah, why did I say that? I say that because this is a wonderful, simple example to show that if we find a fundamental law, we could call it the law of the level of science itself, it's the law of being, but when we find such a law, which is very simple, and there's only three elements, that this reduction is a reduction to such simplicity that it is very easily to be understood, and yet we always said science is that which reduces to simplicity without losing its infinitude. Didn't we say that is the method of science? Now here you see it very simply. You take the infinite subject of the one being. We reduce it to one simple law. And then we have reduced it to one simple law. We can again multiply it. We multiply it by saying, I put at the place of God, I can put the 7 synonymous term, and you get already in this way a 7 by 7 elaboration, 49 aspects or side aspects or sub aspects of that law. And you can see that if we take any of these points of intersection in the chart and can intelligently reduce it to a law, and then afterwards elaborate that law, infinite, we get really infinite manifestations of that law. Did I make myself clear about the method? It's an absolutely simple method. But you can see, you don't just try from some kind of personal inspiration to see something good and something big and the truth. Your own personal inspiration doesn't play not a single part in it. It's principle interpreting itself through its categories, not through the way I look at it. Is that clear? A principle says, I have my categories, therefore I interpret myself and show forth myself as laws, but always only through my categories. The category of the level of science itself, and then through the categories of the 7. Instead of using perhaps that term that we have been using, being its own being, Mrs. Eddy uses in her term that God is his own infinite mind, which is already a kind of elaboration of it, so that actually we could say fundamentally we could call this, or we could define this law as saying being, God being, is its own infinite being. Perhaps in that way we can formulate that law anyway we did it at that time. So that when you have that law, you really can elaborate that over hours and hours. You can make a matrix of it, the matrix of the infinite one, just having a matrix of 7 on the horizontal, 7 on the vertical, and you get a wonderful matrix, a simple matrix, mind as mind, mind as spirit, mind as soul, and so on, and so on, and so on. That's how you can practice actually what we should do, or what every science does, is that when a science applies itself, they apply laws. They don't establish laws in electricity or in physics or in mechanics or in chemistry and so on in order not to use them when they apply chemistry or their field. They always work according to laws. They don't work according to haphazardness, to hit and miss method. Some are perhaps in a state of experimentation, of trying. That's also a method, but that's not really the method of the deduction which we can use. But else, you always fall back on a definite law and say, now I solve this problem according to this definite law. And what you do, you take that law and take the elements of that law and put the values of each element into that law and then calculate it. So here we have that law with three elements. Being, capital B, is its own, that's a relationship to itself. Being, again, capital B, therefore we can practice on that law. And this is naturally the most encompassing practice that we could ever think out, because it seems that there is nothing bigger than to see that mind is its own infinite mind. And then go on, that mind is its own infinite spirit. And you can see that if you want to go through all the 49 and to think about the implication, about to think about the atmosphere of each statement, what means mind is its own infinite mind, and you pause and you listen and you feel what that means when you know the tonality of mind, what that implies, what it means, that it takes you a nice long evening to go through that one law with its elaboration. But you certainly give then to the world a very mighty treatment, and to yourself too. Yes, that's clear. I hope so. Now, let's be a bit more specific. What, say, would your consciousness see, what would you be aware in consciousness when you would start out to think through that law? And you would say, mind is its own infinite mind. Does it mean anything to you? Or are it just words, just a few words that we can learn very quickly? You know, we can just say to our little child who has begun to write and say, you write it down tonight, all the 47, huh? And you can write down that very easily, mind is its own infinite mind, and underneath mind is its own infinite spirit, but it doesn't do anything. Until it becomes consciousness. Now, what would you feel, for instance? We only take one out of the 49. What do you feel, for instance, what that means, that mind is its own infinite mind? What universe would open up to you? What would you feel would this mean? See, it may mean just nothing. To many students, if perhaps you say to one of your Christian Science friends that you encounter on the street and say, hello, I haven't seen you for a long time. Do you still go to church, and how was the service, and so on? And you would say, you know, I've just seen something. A mind is its own infinite mind. What would be the reaction of that person? Perhaps something big, perhaps nothing, huh? what is our reaction? What does it mean to us? So that it doesn't mean, well, what shall I say, a table is a table, huh? Just defining mind as mind, mind to be mind, what does it really imply? Mind is its own, is its own infinite mind. Golly, a whole world opens up. If you are, with that alone, you may be able to tackle and to have dominion over a whole problem, of a terrific problem. What does it mean? Will you try? Does it mean anything to you? Yes? Have a go. You see? Apparently this is not so easy. Or you will just jump. Because since 73, you know these tapes, in 73 you have been acquainted with these laws, it's 73, that's nearly 8 years, you have been practicing, hopefully, this law. You have been sitting over those laws for whole evenings, you know, those wonderful long winter nights, where it's dark, where you don't, where everything is quiet around you, and you just say, now I really want to enjoy myself. I really want to enjoy myself. I don't listen to the radio nor to the TV. I listen now to God. And you start out in an ordered way. And you say, mind. You see a whole world of mind. Can't you see a whole world of mind when you say, mind? See the whole world of mind, which says there is just one big intelligence, one infinite knowing, one infinite all-knowing, that's mind, one infinite intelligent all-knowing, one creative, constantly creative, conceiving intelligence all-knowing, that infinite, creative, all-knowing which guides and governs everything. You open up your consciousness to the whole mind, to the whole of mind, and you begin to see that this mind, now comes the main point, is its own infinite mind. What does it mean? Think of it, what it means. That mind can only mind itself. That it can only be aware of itself, its own mind. That mind has no other mind but that wonderful, all-knowing, all-conceiving, all-comprehending, all-intelligent, creative, guiding and leading mind. And that's the only mind that mind is aware of in the whole universe. In the whole of being, since time immemorial, from eternity to eternity, there has been no other mind. Wouldn't you think that would solve all those many questions where you think you have to deal with lots of minds, with a lot of people's mind, with a lot of people's opinion? Wouldn't that be solving everything where you feel that there is another mind, like mortal mind, that mortal mind actually is the cause of all disease and of all discord? Wouldn't that solve it when you see that mind is its own, but infinite mind, and as a little rule of thumb see that therefore there can be no other mind, there was never a consciousness of another mind, that mind never could conceive of another mind, that divine mind never knew any other mind. Therefore, in that one mind, there was never anything of a mortal mind bringing forth its own phenomena, its own discord. Don't you feel that it's a universe that opens up, that roars like a lion? You hear that mind roaring like a lion in the wilderness, and it shatters the whole world, because it says that mind which is capitalized and which is the only intelligence, the only creative intelligence, the only creative power, the intelligent creative power, the only causative intelligent creative power, that alone guides and leads and everything and inspires and influences everything, that is its own infinite mind. There is no other mind. There has never been a knowledge of another mind. There never existed another mind. Another mind is unknown, is absolutely unknown there. Didn't we have on the level of science itself that evil is unknown? So mind, mortal mind, is unknown there. Therefore, we can see if mind is its own infinite mind, there is that there, that mortal mind is unknown, which says, I can also do something, I can make mistakes, I can make trouble, I can turn everything upside down, I can influence people and so on. It's all out. It's unknown there. Your consciousness at that point naturally sees not like a little thing called divine mind, but that divine mind is the whole world, you see. It's the infinite mind. And in the infinitude there is nothing. There is nothing known outside of the infinitude. Nothing exists outside of the infinitude. Do you see what I mean? If you contemplate that just in a touch, in a sense of touch of it, in a sense of feel of it, naturally in the tonality of it, you feel a whole world opening up just with that 1/49th of that law, just with mind being its own infinite mind.